child abuse. For most of us, thankfully, just hearing the suggestion of abuse makes us shudder. The idea of intentionally hurting a child, whether it's physically, mentally, or emotionally, just seems unacceptable. Dr. Ann Botash, a pediatrician and director of the Child Abuse and Referral Evaluation Program at SUNY Upstate, is in the studio with me this morning. Good morning, Dr. Botash.
Good morning.
She's here to provide some background information on a headline from the past few weeks that regards a program that helps pediatricians and family care physicians report child abuse. Now, what is this program exactly?
The article that came out on domestic violence actually was a study that looked at two different methods of assessing whether, I think it only looked at women, but assessing whether women in the practice, mothers, had domestic violence exposure and whether their children were exposed to domestic violence. And they were looking specifically, really just to count. They wanted to know how many people in the practice had some history of emotional or physical abuse.
And you mean patients that go to a certain practice?
Correct.
Okay.
And they only, did this in a small group. It was about 130, I think it was 133 people that participated, mothers that participated, I think out of 150, which actually was a good return rate on a survey. But they were doing this because the American Academy of Pediatrics now recommends, it's part of the guidelines to do domestic violence screening in a pediatric practice. So this was in an attempt to see how well these two screening tools that are being used by others, how well they work in a pediatric practice. It took about 5 to 10 minutes for the mothers to fill them out, and it was in an urban area, and there were some literacy issues, and some of the mothers needed somebody to read the surveys to them. But in general, I think they showed that the survey worked, and that they were able to identify domestic violence, intimate partner violence, whatever you would want to call it, in that population.
It's very interesting to me that they would do a paper survey with questions that way. I have to think there are all kinds of emotional issues just in filling out a survey. If you're involved in some kind of an abusive situation, there's fear, I would think. There's some guilt,
yes,
I would think. So I find it remarkable that many of the mothers filled out the survey.
And I think that was part of it. They wanted to show that, this worked, doing it in a paper survey. But they also, there's other people that have studied this and, did three questions. And the screening really didn't work that well with three questions. I mm-hmm. think it was about a 50%, that really 50% were not abused or said they were not abused, but actually were.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think it's,
it's
the less questions you have,
mm-hmm.
and it depends how you do it, the method, and
yes.
There's so much that can happen in an office setting that they may not feel comfortable, talking to, maybe it's not their usual physician or
right.
whatever. So I think they are still trying to. I mean, there's no right or wrong way that's been really identified yet to help physicians with how to help their patients better that are involved in these situations.
Well, I guess my real question, though, is it's okay to collect data about the amount of abuse that might be going on, but so what? What happens to it after that? What do you use those numbers for?
Well, that's a good question. I think, first of all, we need the numbers in order to be able to get funding for services to help these mothers. So until we really have a good count on the numbers, and this is really only a study that's just looking at the medical practices, people in the police agencies and community agencies,
the
like
schools.
Vera House,
mm-hmm.
the schools, they have an idea from their perspective of the numbers. So this is really looking at the numbers in a pediatric practice. So you have to figure out how many you have, and then figure out whether you have the services or not to refer these people to. But I think the deeper part of your question is, how do the physicians know
right.
what to do when they've identified
exactly
domestic violence? And this is very similar to the area that I'm more familiar with and work with on a daily basis, is when you identify child abuse as a mandated reporter, you're required to report it to the state hotline. But what do you do then?
Right.
What are the next? How do you talk to parents that have potentially one of them has abused the child, or something terrible happened in a neighbor's setting? And how do you talk to the parents? What skills do we have to help them to understand what really happened, what's going to happen next? And it's the same thing for domestic violence. What's out there? We need to know as physicians what the community services are and what, you know, what's available. But also we need to know how to address this one-on-one with the families. And that's not really taught well.
And so therefore, how do the doctors learn it? How do they know exactly? I mean, okay, now they've identified a family that there's abuse, whether it's the children or it's the mother or whatever it is. Now what do they do? And who teaches them how to do it?
I think that they do, you know, have some intrinsic skills just because they've learned communication skills in, you know, medical school and residency. So there's some intrinsic skills there, and hopefully they've had a little bit of practice, you know, with it. But generally they do not learn it. I mean, it's something that they need to learn as continuing education.
And you're trying to teach them, aren't you?
Well, we have a program, the CHAMP program, that's a statewide network of physicians. We've set up centers of excellence around the state, and we have a CME site, and actually if people
and
go...
And CME is?
Oh, continuing medical education.
Right.
So that physicians can go online and learn about these issues and get some credit for it.
Mm-hmm.
And we set this up through state funding, through actually it's a statute that is set up to keep our program going, the CHAMP program.
Mm-hmm.
And if people go to champprogram.com, they can see what are some of the things that we do. And we have a system in place to standardize the care that people provide for child abuse.
That's physical care as well as mental health care, isn't it?
Well, it's mostly physical care because mm-hmm. as physicians, pediatricians, we're mostly providing, you know, treatment for illnesses and injuries and that kind of thing.
So maybe it's identification of when to refer for mental health
care? It's more referral for mental health. But also, you know, there's some, we have a PowerPoint that's going up actually on communication skills. So there's a little bit more than just, you know, how you treat.
How often does a family go into a doctor's office and are they quizzed about these kinds of questions and they become offended because it's not something they're involved in or they're afraid to admit it?
Well, these are our new recommendations for domestic violence, so it probably hasn't happened much
mm-hmm.
yet. But I could imagine that most people would feel initially uncomfortable because they're not used to their doctor asking them
right.
these kinds of questions. Same thing for child abuse. When a child comes in and there's an injury and, you know, I have to ask the parent, how did it happen? I know that they are feeling defensive, and so it's hard.
But parents should expect to hear this more and more from pediatricians and family care doctors then, shouldn't they?
Yes.
Yes. Well, Dr. Ann Botesh, thanks so much for coming by this morning. We understand this a little bit better. We'll ask you to come back maybe in a few weeks to talk more about child abuse and some of the prevention measures.
I'd be happy to. Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's Checkup from the Neck Up. Rewiring our brains, or home run king, your name here, steps up to the plate. Well, dear listeners, some of you know I'm a longtime runner, but on the disabled list for a year and a half with a pulled hamstring, healing in super slow-mo. The negative predictions, this will never get better. Your running career is over. Why bother? Lurking in every rehab workout and jog. And so months ago, I'm out for a not-so-speedy dawn jog around the high school. Tootling past the baseball field, I see the spring grass and the dirty white square bases, and flash comes one Little League moment of 40-plus years ago. It was Saturday morning. My dad was in the bleachers. Me up at bat. So a few months ago, nobody on the field, I walk up to the plate, spin into my hands for good grip on my make-believe Louisville slugger, dig my feet in the red dirt, crouch, squint out at pitch winding up, the ball coming in, wait, swing! The sweetest feeling in my hands, the ball flying, suddenly, surprise, I find myself really plunging down the line to first. I remember the ball going over the right fielder's head. Yeah, center and right, chasing it. Could it be? My teammate screaming, near second, throwing a look over my shoulder, the ball slowing. Can I make it? Right field picking it up and wheeling to throw. Rounding third now, and I can still see my dad doing wildly uncharacteristic, waving, yelling, pointing home. Go, Richie, go! Pounding towards home with the catcher waiting. Slide, but I don't know how, so I stomp hard on the plate into my leaping, cheering blob of friends in white and blue pinstripes. Crossing the plate again a few months ago, amazed, the whole memory was still there. The dust, heat, slowly arcing throw, the wild running, and the yes, maybe I can. My dad beaming, him telling mom, Richie, Babe Ruth O'Neill, the babe for days then. My hamstring remembered being young and strong. So after that, whenever give it up, your hamstring will never heal. Tried to take me out of my running game. I swatted it away with that memory. And you know what? It worked. I stuck with my rehab and my jogs, and I'm off the disabled list, running again and getting faster. So your checkup from the neck up steps to hitting your home run, dear listeners. Notice the strikeout thoughts that throw you off your game. Realize they're only thoughts. Develop your countering image with all your senses and link it to fun and maybe even love. And call it in from the dugout whenever you need it. Remember, neurons that fire together, wire together. Neuron teammates, so keep firing them on the way you want to play, and you'll be off and running for home. I'm Dr. Rich, the Babe O'Neill. Thanks for listening.